Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zooms, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
Tattoos and touchdowns.
Best Sunny Show!
Mark out radio with Big T and Dark Fox.
Masters of None.
360 on 420.
The Kazi and Kenny Show.
It's Lust and Love Radio.
Ham Radio.
OSW Review.
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Alcohol by Volume.
This is Unsung with Jay Fox.
It's time for Dutch and Royce.
Three speakers with Lance and Kyle.
Whoa.
Get ready for Hippo Juice.
It's the Red Show.
It's Daytime Divas with Marianne and Kitty.
Welcome to the Gentleman Show.
Welcome back to the Ellis and Alfred Show.
This is the Fifth Circle.
Radio Meltdown.
Ensue Radio.
The Nerd Hour.
You're checking out the Cousin Joe Show on More Like Radio.
More Like Radio!
Obviously, it was... Oh, never mind, I'm not going to explain it, but...
No, explain radio to Ashley.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Would you mind taking Colin for a walk about 8?
That's 2,800 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Now here's your host, that's Ashley, and this is...
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Welcome everyone to Antisocial Gamer Radio live on morelikeradio.com. Got a Portland announcement, but I'll get to that in a sec. Thanks everyone for listening. I do appreciate it. But I'll say I'll get through the usual plenties before I ever tell you the big announcement. If you want to listen to us live, if you listen to the podcast, we're live Tuesdays at 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern. Go to morelikeradio.com/live. If you want to email the show, it's antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. Facebook group, it's facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. And as usual, if you want to like the Facebook page, it's facebook.com/antisocialgameradio. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at MLRGamerRadio. Yeah, important announcement. The Game of the Year show will be not the last ever show, but basically I'm taking some time away because I've got some stuff that I need to take care of. So the show will be off the air for a couple of months until I get this thing sorted. Until I get it all sorted, then I'll be back. But I need some time away to deal with some stuff. Trying to make some money out of some other bits and pieces. That's it. But so, yeah, you know, we're going all the way through now until the Game of the Year show, which will be the last day of the year. So you'll still have me to listen to for the next 7-8 weeks. But after that, I'll be off the air for a couple of months, trying to sort some stuff out. But once that's done, I should be back on the air again. Hopefully before the summertime. Don't know yet. As soon as I get my little project sorted. And, you know, by then, hopefully, I should have one of the newer consoles anyway that's out on the market. Because I think, like, between, New Year's and the summertime, the show will probably be a bit of a dead show anyway. Because most of the stuff that's coming out will be for the newer console. And money's tight at the moment, so I won't really have enough to afford it. So hopefully when I do come back, I will be, sort some stuff out anyway. So basically stuff I've been playing. Not too much, because basically I haven't got Call of Duty. I'm not that fussed about getting it, to be honest. The reviews seem to be good and bad. But I have, you know, as you've been playing Pokemon, doing some breeding. Sort of, my breeding plan sort of worked. I've got like the world's strongest Caterpie now. Basically the whole thing with this breeding with the new X and Y is that we can have, you know, your Pokemon, if you breed it properly, it can have 5 perfect IVs. And, you know, I was messing around with a Caterpie because it's a Caterpie. I got the perfect nature that I wanted. It doesn't really learn any moves from sort of, you know, egg moves from breeding. So it basically, you can just sort of breed it straight off the bat. It's not a problem. And it's got 5 perfect IVs and what I want. So, you know, my little plan worked of breeding 4 Caterpie with 4 perfect IVs with another one to get 5. It's worked. So, I mean, she was, they say that you can get 6. Some people say that you have to breed 2 Pokemon with 5 perfect IVs together to get the 6th one. But to be honest, it's not that, I'm not that fussed anyway. Considering one of them's always going to be a sort of negative nature, negative stat because of the natures and, you know, that sort of stuff. That's pretty much it with Pokemon. It's literally, as I said last week, I've done the end game stuff. It's literally just me breeding and breeding and, you know, I mean, you know, when I am going to be off the air, don't, you know, I should have mentioned this. I'm still going to be on Twitter, so keep following me, don't unfollow me. The Facebook group's still going to be there because, you know, there's a bunch of people still use it. I still use it. I haven't posted any trailers in there for a while because I've been realizing this. But the thing is, though, there's nothing coming out that we need to see. Everything that we did want that should be out by now is being delayed. Over the next couple of weeks, I'll have plenty to talk about with the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. So there'll be plenty of stuff to talk about and always posting stuff. I will be here. It's just I won't be playing as much games as I want to because my other project, I want to get that done. And she was, the quicker I get that done, the quicker I get back on the air. And basically, I just need to take some time away from everything. And it's literally just me doing what I need to do nonstop for 24/7 until I get it done. But yeah, I say, you know, I will be still here and about and all that sort of stuff. Also, I have, as the main thing, as you all know, Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Still loving that game. Where I am in this game at the moment, I'm thinking to myself, I probably will buy the next Assassin's Creed. I mean, I'm about halfway through. I think it's like, I'm on memory sync 7 or 8. I think I'm sort of somewhere there, near there. But yeah, I mean, I'm sort of, I've maxed out the ship as much as I can. Hang on, what's this? Sorry, I was reading from the chat. What was it? Yeah, story so far. The James Kidd thing has revealed herself to be a woman, to Edward Kenway, which was a really awkward scene, because they're sort of, I think, where were they? They were at some sort of governor's mansion. And basically, they're both sort of sitting on this high thing, just talking about stuff, like how to get in. And then basically, James just sort of undoes the banner from her hair, and, you know, Edward looks at her and it's like, this is slightly spoilers, but to be honest, if you were listening to James' character, you know it's not a real bloke. He says to her, "You're not a real woman, are you?" He says, "Your name's not James, is it?" And then she says, "Not most of the time, no." And it was really awkward, but it was really funny. That's sort of where I am in the story, like halfway through. Edward Kenway's met the assassins, and they've basically told him to bugger off. And they don't like him, which can lead into the thing with, you know, which is weird considering that supposedly this follows Desmond's bloodline, and, you know, Edward's not welcome as part of the assassins, even though he stole the assassin, garb from Duncan, the assassin you kill right at the beginning of the game. But yeah, it's really good. I'm tons of fun, Blackbeard's in it, which is weird, right? Because I've been doing some reading up on on Blackbeard, because the year I am in the game now is 1718, and that's the year Blackbeard dies. So I'm like, it's kind of foreshadowing. It's like, yep, I'm going to enjoy having Blackbeard in it for this part of the game, because pretty soon he's going to be dead and he's going to have his head cut off and dangling from a ship, and it's going to be, you know, no spoilers, it's history. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that, which is, I mean, because Blackbeard's gone sort of mad, to be honest. Which, you know, he's Blackbeard, he did go sort of mad. But yeah, I'm having tons of fun playing through the game, you know. you know, playing a bits and pieces at a time, sort of, you know, with the ship, I've got as upgraded as far as I can take it, because I've unlocked the ability to use the diving bell, basically the big thing you can drop into the ocean and you can do the underwater stuff, but they're really, really hard. There's a few of them scattered around, because I've been taking over the ports as well, the naval forts. They're quite tricky as well. But yeah, so I've unlocked them, so I know where all the places to dive are. And in those places, you can get some of the chests. They give you plans to upgrade the jackdaw even further. You can use you can have like the elite cannons, the elite hull, that sort of stuff. It's all the elite gear, but it basically takes a whole lot of metal, a whole lot of wood, tons of money to upgrade it, you know, to pay for it all. But yeah, I mean, it's the underwater diving bit, the underwater stuff, it's fun. It's a bit tricky to control. I don't think really they've got it, spot on, Ubisoft. I don't think they've really done it as well as we're used to. But I mean, most games that do feature something underwater, like underwater segments, don't really have it down either. I mean, you know, you go back to Tomb Raider back in the day, that was kind of tricky trying to do the underwater segments. There is no real game that has sort of mastered the underwater, being underwater. But it does a good job. But I mean, it's a bit tricky because you've got to sort of contend with basically all the elite stuff. It's in the sort of harder underwater sections, and they basically, there's those sharks everywhere, so you're trying to avoid them. There's jellyfish. There's coral reefs which you can get, you can lose health with, same with the jellyfish and the sharks. It's a lot of fun. It's just, it's really, really tricky. And basically I don't mind just sort of desyncing and then, just going back in, trying to get the chest that I didn't get the last time. It's a lot of fun. It adds a different part to the game. And which I've sort of explored pretty much most of what I can do. I've done the underwater stuff, I've crafting, the ship building. I mean, the thing I have done, I did get, because basically when James shows you basically the hideout that you have for your main base, which, to be honest, you don't really use that much, because, I mean, I got stuck, I couldn't find it, and I had to sort of run around the whole island trying to find out how to get into the underground bit, because there's an armor set, Templar armor, which is hidden behind this like a wall. It's like a lattice wall, and you need keys. I mean, I got all the keys. I did all the missions. There's like five missions with like three or four little submissions in between, and you sort of do a little bit of a story. And they're interesting. It's not the greatest part of storytelling, and doesn't really do much to the game. But it does show some other assassins, some different cultures, that sort of stuff from that time period. But it's fun. I got the armor. It looks pretty nice, actually. So I've done that. Upgrade the ship. Take some naval ports. I'm sort of ready to finish the game. Maybe it's because I'm playing this on the PlayStation instead of the Xbox. I'm not overly keen on trying to finish, I have, as I've said numerous times now, I have got all the achievements from the first two games and most of them from pretty much every other game that doesn't require most of the stuff that's not online, online achievements. But yeah, I mean, I'm not too fussed about unlocking everything or doing everything or finding every chest. But I just do want to just sort of get through the game, hurry it up, finish it. Because, there's been patches coming on for Batman, so I need to get that again for my PlayStation. The new Ratchet and Clank game comes out Friday, which, to be honest, I think it's out over in the States now. There's tons of stuff I need to play, and, before I do sort of, put myself on timeout from gameplay. I mean, as I say, I'm still playing with Pokemon because the national tournament's next year, and I wouldn't mind a free trip to Washington. So that's pretty much all I've been playing this week. Bits and pieces here and there, usual bits, really. It's kind of a dead period for games at the moment. There's not much out. There's stuff out, but it's, we're pretty much at the end of the, the end of the gaming year. I mean, the stuff that we did want has not come out, or it's been delayed, and this sort of stuff. Basically, I'll just go straight into the main topic, which is going to be about Final Fantasy this week, because I was supposed to do it last week, but I talked about other bits and pieces which were from last year. I'm hoping, so I got this article from IGN, I'm hoping that the ads don't kick in, because I've been doing a bunch of, you know, doing some show prep as I did yesterday, and IGN's got a bunch of bloody ads that just keep popping, not like on-screen ads, but it's just audio stuff, and it's like trying to find out where it is. So basically, if it does kick in, I will delete the thing and have to restart it, delete the article to restart it to get rid of the ads, because I have no idea why this just keeps kicking on. But it, and I'm doing okay so far, so nothing's, you know, nothing's started just yet, but never know. As I said, yeah, you know, I talk about Final Fantasy and Square Enix and all this big, you know, conundrum that's going on with why the games aren't selling or the games are terrible or, you know. But I mean, you know, Final Fantasy 15 looks pretty good. You know, we can't complain about that. But I'll start off this thing. How Final Fantasy plans to survive. I'm just trying to think now. I was looking at these things. It says, what is Final Fantasy? Time was that question would have been easier to answer. they really need to work on their editing with this stuff. They were Japanese RPGs with turn-based battles, familiar monsters, and epic stories. But anyone with even rudimentary knowledge of gaming has probably realized that Final Fantasy isn't what it once was. There are those who feel angered by the changes recent entries it's in the series have introduced, while others like myself, this is, you know, from the person who wrote this on IGN, have rather appreciated them. When I say that Final Fantasy isn't what it once was, I don't mean that in a negative way. It's just that the brand that was, that has been synonymous with JRPGs for a decade has branched out. It's this that makes Lightning Return so exciting, because they talk about, you know, the new Final Fantasy 13. Lightning Returns game, which, to be honest, everyone's given big props. I don't know if it's basically, you know, money has been backhanded, changing hands with people to say, yeah, this game is going to be crap, but it's going to be good. But to be honest, though, this does come from IGN, and they are, you know, they have no money in their pocket whatsoever. You know, going from work being worth, was it 600 million to, I don't know, less than 70? It's, you know, it's a big kick in the bum. Not only is this the franchise's part in shot on this generation of consoles, it's also a conclusion to the brand's first trilogy, which has been devised to say, diverse. God, I need to clean my bloody screen. Diverse to say the least. Several of its features, like the action combat system, also appear to be preparing serious stalwarts for the more action-orientated Final Fantasy 15. The announced upcoming Final Fantasy titles make it clear that the franchise is in a phase of intense transition. With this in mind, there was one question I had to ask as soon as I sat down with Lightning Returns director, Motomo Toriyama, and gameplay director Yuichi Abe. Just what does the Final Fantasy moniker mean these days? Because, you know, basically he sat down with these people because there was this committee that's basically, you know, what are we going to do with Final Fantasy? And these are the people from it. Let me start with how we used to define Final Fantasy, Toriyama's told me. He says, when the game's consoles were almost everything that mattered in those days, we aimed to make the most out of the specs of the popular consoles to be able to offer cutting-edge supreme gaming experiences to our users. That was what we were looking for. Since then, though, I think the environment in which gamers play has experienced quite a drastic change. Now we need games angled towards more casual gamers as well as those for more high-end players, like Lightning Returns. But what all these different types of Final Fantasy games have in common is that they offer deep and engaging immense immersion in a fantasy setting. That's what we always think of when we're creating a new Final Fantasy. In essence, where Final Fantasy was once called a mind turn-based RPGs with a lot of menus, there was that's no longer compulsory. Given that Square is placing increasing focus on the mobile and tablet market, I was going to say it the other way around. It should come as a no surprise that its core franchise is part of that strategy. This doesn't matter. This doesn't have to do with have to be a negative thing, though. Final Fantasy 14. Sorry, should make it clear to any doubters that the developer is capable of branching out from the traditional JRPG roots of its franchise, even if it doesn't always get it right on the first attempt. Just as a Realm Reborn succeeded by learning from the original Final Fantasy XIV's failure, so too has Lightning Returns learned from the complaints that levied at the first two installments. Now, this is right. This is I'm going to be interjecting all the way through this. This is weird, right? They're basically hoping with Lightning Returns to make the Final Fantasy games something fresh. But to be honest, it's the trilogy. It's story-based. It's nice that you want to be able to do this and, give players something better than the previous two. But to be honest, if people didn't... Right, we'll say 70% of the people who played Final Fantasy XIII, the first one, didn't like it. You got 30% who played the second one, Final Fantasy XIII 2. And now if you take, say, 20%, out of that 30%, say, 80% of them liked it or didn't like you still got the small percent that you started out with who will be playing this new one, but you want this new one to cater to the ones who didn't like the games before. But to be honest, to catch him up on the story, unless you do some sort of what Mass Effect did for the PlayStation with some sort of comic book story, some comic book storytelling, no one's really going to play this anyway. Because to be honest, we didn't like the first one. Everyone came out and said they didn't like the first one. But you made a second one, and now you've made a third one, and you're hoping to do something better with the third one than you could do with the first two. It's like, you try again, but if you keep trying failing, no one's going to want it. This is what you're not getting. It's just, I mean, I've said this before, but, I'm just rehashing what I'm saying. I'll just carry on reading this article. Hence the decision to bring back popular faces, offer a more open world, and continue to tweak the combat system. Now, I didn't really have a main problem with Final Fantasy. I got about halfway through it with Final Fantasy XIII, this is. But, I mean, the main problem was the combat system, the fact that they made it more streamlined, like for the casual players. But the thing is, I've been playing Final Fantasy since Final Fantasy VII back on the original PlayStation. I know how to play a Final Fantasy game. That's the thing. See, after when you think right, it was the 13th main title Final Fantasy game that we got. It's people have been playing Final Fantasy on the Famicom, which was 3, which was 6. Had a kebab for tea. But no, it's like, people have been playing Final Fantasy for years. If you're not playing Final Fantasy after, you're just trying to look for something to jump into, I mean, yes, that's good, but it's kind of too little too late, to be honest, considering that pretty much all the better games, which this can be agreed by many a people, the better games have come and gone. People loved 6, which was known as 3 out in the States. And over here, I believe, as well. When it came on the Super Nintendo or the original Nintendo? I don't know. One of them. I think, original Nintendo, I believe. Before my time. But yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of 7, 8, 9. I mean, 10's coming out as a HD edition, which I'm going to pick up because I like 10. I didn't like 10-2. That was a pile of dog shit. But yeah, It is a pretty good game series. I mean, we've got other stuff. We've got other JRPGs. We've got, the Tales series, which I'm starting to become a big fan of. I've still got to get, as I'm playing the PlayStation 3 now, I've still got to get the new one for that. But yeah, I mean, and we've got the Dragon Quest series as well. That's pretty good. But yeah, there's tons of, other JRPGs out there that you could start with. But, and they still keep to the same method, to be honest. I mean, Tales has its own sort of combat system, which, works. It's, sort of button bashing, which I have a lot of fun with. But the only thing with the Tales series, it sort of differs from the, it differs from the Final Fantasy stuff because the combat's, more free flowing. But the storytelling's worse with the Tales series. I mean, I liked, is it Tales of Symphonia? That was pretty good. But, I mean, the Tales of the Abyss, I hated the story. It was terrible. I mean, that's pretty much what maybe was what doing it with this one. It's the story. I don't know. I'll carry on reading this article. Where was I? Yep. But it's different. But it's a different type of combat that's always defined Final Fantasy. Turn-based combat, to be precise. If you'd asked a year ago whether the Final Fantasy series would fully abandon its menu-heavy bat turn-based battle system, I'd have told you firmly that there wasn't. What the hell's that? An icicle's, sorry. I thought that was spelt differently. An icicle's chance in hell that it would happen. Now, though, with Lightning set to storm on the consoles early next year, and Versus 13 rebranded as the next numbered entry in the series, it's looking like the turn-based games we used to love have had their time in the sun. The rebranding Versus 13, I think they totally scrapped it and just made Final Fantasy 15. That's my thing. Because, I mean, I've seen some of the characters that were supposed to be in Versus 13, and they're not even in this one. But, you know, whatever. It'd be a shame that quintessential Final Fantasy feature done so well so many times that it established a benchmark for an entire game genre of games has itself been benched. According to Abe, though, it's the ultimate fate is still to be decided. But I mean, I've never had a problem with the turn-based combat. If you take it away and you do a free-flowing combat-based system, you're going to need basically, you know, more aware gamers. I mean, we have in the past playing, you know, every Final Fantasy game until 13, basically just been spamming the attack button. I've never had a problem with that. It's fun. It's standard. It's tradition. It can be seen as, it's more, considering the fact that, I was talking about Call of Duty last week, how it's the same old, same old. That could be said for this, but, if it still works, it works. And, no matter how bad or good the reviews of Call of Duty, people are still buying it because it's the same old, and it works. And until basically the sales go down, but to be honest, I haven't seen any sales figures. But maybe in a couple of weeks they'll start releasing some. That's not true. I've actually got something in the news about that. Yeah, I'll take that back. But no, I have seen some sales figures, but not the sort of ones that are beneficial to the argument. We obviously opted for a real-time battle system for Lightning Returns, Abe said. I think that one of the main reasons that we did this was we thought that the particular system would be the best suited to match the very high specs and high-end graphics of the game. But as Toriyama-san touched on earlier, this is a time and era of diversity. So there are different types of games, different types of gamers, different types of gaming environments. If we're making games for iPads and tablets, something like that, maybe it's not all that important for us to implement a real-time battle system. So I think each time we need to identify what would be the best approach for each of the existing consoles. If real-time works, we'll go with that. If turn-based feels more appropriate, we'll use that. We won't necessarily go back to turn-based. It's all about us making the right decision for the title we're working on. Just sort of looking at how far this article goes on for. Yeah. I want to take a break for a second on this thing, because they're talking about the combat here, right? Matty's in the chat. He says, real life combat is pretty boring unless you're doing hand-to-hand like Mortal Kombat. Yeah, exactly. I mean, my thing with the combat system, it depends on the characters. But the thing is, though, you think about all the different characters that we've had with the Final Fantasy games over the series. I mean, I'm thinking about most of the recent stuff, to be honest. I think about, like Final Fantasy X. What the hell was his name? Starts with a Whacker in Final Fantasy X. He used a bloody beach ball as a weapon. You've got Hope from Final Fantasy XIII. Was it a boomerang he was using? There's been some really strange and unusual weapons used for combat. I mean, whereas we go to Final Fantasy VII, we think, Cloud had his sword, Barrett had his gun arm. Tifa, she was a martial artist. Yuffie, she was a ninja. Vincent, you know, he had his guns. Kate Sith had the megaphone that would smack people with. Sid had his harpoon. You know, these are weapons. They're stuff that you're supposed to, you know, use with. But if you wanted a real, that's the thing. If you with the earlier ones, you had it was an active time battle, which I think basically, yeah, which is basically what they've made in the games. It's not actually a real life combat, because that's basically what the Tales games have. They have a real life combat where your enemy's always attacking, and you know you can spam the attack button and you know, do whatever you want, but there's combos and stuff like that you can do with your characters in the Tales games. But the real world life combat, what they're saying about, is not really real life combat at all. It's basically the active time battle, which has been in every single I'd like to say every single game, but I'm not so sure where I've seen it. But I know it was in the Final Fantasy VII. And I think it was in 8. And it basically is like, yeah, you don't wait for the opponent to attack. They just keeps on attacking and attacking. And, you know, that makes it more real life. But it depends. Because I think about stuff like, I'm just thinking now about Final Fantasy XI. Whereas there was no, you know, you just be like, you know, a random battles. It would be, you'd actually see your enemies, like you go, I mean, there was parts where you were in the castles and stuff, you'd be running down a hall, and there'd be like a soldier, and then you'd enter a battle with a soldier, and it would be, basically, that soldier would sort of split up into several soldiers for that particular battle, and it's like, or there'd be monsters, and it'd be the same thing, and it'd be different monsters, you know, that sort of thing, it'd be like one character there that you would fight, and it would lead into a battle against several different types of characters, but you know, it took away the random battles, but it all has to play to what you want. I mean, when you think about your characters with Final Fantasy, they level up. You get XP, you know, you get enough XP, you level up, or you learn new moves from doing certain things. But it all depends on where they want to go with the characters and with the story. I mean, because with the Final Fantasy stuff, from what I've read so far, what they're not realizing is that it all plays together. It's a big, mix of everything. It's like what makes up the Final Fantasy games when it comes to, you know, the whole thing in itself is like you need your characters, you got to have the story, you got to have your battle system. You including your items, your potion, spells, that sort of stuff. That all fits in together with your character. If they're a mage type character, I mean that was what was good about Final Fantasy VII. You could assign your materia to different characters. With Final Fantasy VIII, you could do the Guardian forces. You know, you could assign them to certain characters as well as the spells that you could sort of draw spells. Final Fantasy IX, I'm just thinking about Final Fantasy IX. What did Final Fantasy IX do? I think for Final Fantasy IX you learnt attacks. The closest we've actually had, The closest we've actually had to a proper Final Fantasy game since, we'll say 10, was, The Lost Odyssey. And that wasn't even Final Fantasy. It was, what the hell was it? Miss Walker Studios, I think, which basically was the main guy from Square Enix. The main games director. He went off to do them, I don't think they've really done much since. I mean, Lost Odyssey was a great game. I never finished it because it got too hard. But it was a really good game, and you know that was quite fun too. One second, I need a drink. Oh, that's better. No, I think. When it comes to, say, well, Lost Odyssey, we'll take that. There was items which you could pass around your characters, and they would learn new abilities and new spells, and, you know, that's how they would learn to get stronger. And that was pretty good, too. I mean, there's another one I can't think of what the hell it's called. This came out back in the day, you know, 5-6 years ago, when it came to, we had a big rush on JRPGs. You know, it was Lost Odyssey. I think it was Tales of the Unexpected. I don't know, hang on. No, what am I thinking of? No, I think there's some other game. Crap. And there was The Last Guardian. There's been so many JRPGs that come out on the Xbox 360. I need to find them somewhere. But yeah, I mean, you know, your battle system depends on what you've been. I mean, on how the game is, how it's based. I mean, I say with Final Fantasy, it was the materia. That was what the whole thing was about. You know, there's a part later in the game where you had to gather all the materia together to help save the world. And that was the point. And then in Final Fantasy VIII, it was the Guardian Forces and spells. And the use of the Guardian Forces was basically erasing the memory of the characters. And they were forgetting parts from their past. I mean, none of them remember their childhood. What was it? Nine? No, I don't think it was any sort of... I think nine was you could learn spells from items and stuff. I can't remember what nine was. Ten was. See, it's been a while since I played this stuff. I really have no clue now. I was playing nine the other day. Crap, was up when I just started playing again. But you know, your whole development cycle of how you want the characters to play out with whatever it is, it's all together as one big thing. It's not, you can say, well, we're going to take out the whole turn-based fighting system, but you've got to think, well, how does that affect the characters, what they do, who they are, what their weapon is? I mean, you know, I go out of whacker on Final Fantasy X. Use a bloody beach ball for a weapon. Not beach ball, it was a blitz ball. There we go. I know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I love blitz ball. Great game. But yeah, it all depends on, you know, what you want. But this whole thing about iPad and tablet games, it's like, well, yeah, which ones? They've got some of the earlier Final Fantasy games that have been remade on the, you know, iPad. I mean, Final Fantasy IV is now on sale. I think it's on sale still on the iPod Touch on iTunes. I want to pick it up, but I've got no time to play it. To be honest, I'm mostly playing Pokemon when it comes to the handheld stuff. But it depends. I mean, how you want your characters to be. What's the main focus of the world? As I said, you know, seven was the materia, and eight was basically draw spells. It depends, really. You know. I'll carry on reading this article. Where was I? Sorry, one sec. An accusation that has been fired at Square over the years is that Final Fantasy has been dumbed down in a bid to cater to the lowest common denominator. Indeed, many view this as the reason that combat's been changed. Supposedly, hack and slash combat is much more palatable than turn-based battles. I pitched this to the developing duo, finally expecting an evasive response. What Abe said to me, however, was surprisingly candid. At the beginning of the project, he's talking about Lightning Returns, was going to be a very, very, very hard game with a very hard, very high difficulty level. We wanted to make it more accessible for all the users rather than just core gamers. So that there were some areas and elements we decided not to include in the final version. Now looking at the game as it is, I do sometimes feel like, okay, even though it was the right decision for us to make to include those elements in order to make it more accessible, I might have been able to still make it intuitive and easy enough so that proficient gamers could enjoy it. At the moment, in the battle system, unless you get defeated by monsters you've taken on, you're not going to lose at any time. Time gambling element isn't included, but in the original version, if there are some things you don't do so well, you lost some time. That element would have stayed, I think, but we wanted to keep it accessible. For Toriyama and Abe, it seems we keep coming back to the same thing. The way the Final Fantasy brand is going to stay relevant is by being flexible and adapting to whatever situation requires. It's irrefutable, though, that the Final Fantasy XIII trilogy has been instrumental in diversifying the series for better or worse. Yeah. You know, it basically, I mean, I agree with that. It has, it's done, I'd say it's done more worse for the actual series. The thing is though, right, it's Final Fantasy. Amongst us gamers, it's the most known role-play games ever. It's the most known role-play game series ever. I mean, you know, yes, we're now stuff, we have, you know, Mass Effect. That's, you know, Mass Effect 4 should be coming 2015. You know, whenever that's released and whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's Final Fantasy. It's one of the most well-known series in gaming history. Followed closely in Japan by Dragon Quest, and we have the Tales series as well, sort of following up the rear. But yeah, I mean, it's one of the things. That's what makes a Final Fantasy game. It's the combat. It's the story. As I said, it's, you know, it's how you enjoy the combat system. It's like, you need to include everything into it. It's part of everything, you know. But I mean, I've never had a problem with the turn-based games. I mean, my first actual RPG game that I played was Defenders of Oasis on the Game Gear. That was an amazing game. I know I can download it off the eShop onto my Nintendo on my 3DS. But yeah, Defenders of Oasis was an amazing game. Great story. You know, a really, really good game. It sucked me in. It was perfect. But yeah, you know, Final Fantasy, it's the big thing. I mean, you know, Final Fantasy VII was my first one. I mean, that's the thing. It's the world as well. That's what makes a great Final Fantasy game. And I think, I mean, it's not exactly that we haven't been lacking in a world. It's, I mean, the worlds we've been getting are great. I wasn't really too keen on 3. The remake of 3. I mean, I've got it on my iPod. 4, I think, yeah, 4, I loved 4, but the version I had for my Nintendo DS was an American version. It just kept crashing, so I'm not too sure what the hell was wrong with it. 5, I've got, but I haven't played yet. It's on my PlayStation. 6, I've played a little bit of. That's on my PlayStation 3 as well. 7, I mean, the whole thing about 7 was pretty good. It was the intro, you know. That's one of the most iconic intros ever in gaming. It's, you know, the big pan down of Midgar. You know, you see Aeris there. She's walking out in the streets. All the smog, the cars going past, the train. I want to play Final Fantasy again. The train rolling past, and literally the train going, and then it's basically train rolls into the station. Everyone jumps off. The soldiers try and, the guards try and attack you. Barrett kicks the shit out of them. And then Cloud, he, you know, flips over the top. I need to play Final Fantasy VII again. Or at least watch someone play it, else play it. But yeah, it's one of those things. It's iconic. It's the world. I mean, you know, we go Final Fantasy VIII. See, this is what I mean, because Final Fantasy VIII and VII, big leaps in gaming. You got with Final Fantasy VII, you had the big sort of 3D pixel, the blocky sort of character models, whereas with 8, you had a more fleshed out, realistic looking character model, which made everyone look up and pay attention. It was one of the first few games that we've had that have basically redefined how character models look in modern gaming. I will say, I'll stand by that. If I could think of anything else before then, I probably would. But to be honest, that's how we've got the basic modern model of the characters for gaming these days from Final Fantasy VIII and what that did, and the whole cutscenes as well. Because that was all full motion video with people in the big giant black suits with the table tennis balls all over them, that sort of stuff. That was all motion capture. And then we the whole world, it was like set in a school, and it was like, well, there was these fighters, and there was sort of like, guns for hire, and there was magic and sorcery, swords and sorcery, the whole mix of science and magic, the whole, that sort of world. That was great. And then we had, 9, which was more magic based, medieval style, with, it's like a less, I mean, because basically, I mean, eight and nine were sort of steampunk style, but I mean, nine was more you know, Victorian steampunk sort of, you know, that sort of era type thing. And then we had 10, which was sort of set, it was weird. It was like, a post-apocalyptic, sort of setting for number 10, but it was like after the, basically everyone got back themselves back on their feet, you know, but yeah, I mean, what was it, 11? 11 was basically, I think, just set in some sort of, I barely remember anything about 11. Oh, no, sorry, 11 was the online one, wasn't it? Yes, of course it was. I'm such an idiot. Yes, 11, because I did play that one. I do know about that one. Yeah, 11 was the open world one. It was the, you know, it was the MMO. It's a really fun game. I love playing it. I played it for like a month straight. But yeah, it's just, you know, there was no one else there to play it with, to be honest. But it did have some good moments. The thing is, it was like some of the stuff, there was like items that you could, you know, the standard items that we get with every Final Fantasy game, they were there and they were just, you know, overpriced. And it was a thing. It was like going up against games like WoW and, well, what else was coming out at the time? I think Guild Wars maybe. But they hadn't really figured out how to sort of do stuff, which was Final Fantasy XI's failing. But, I mean, it did have the sort of community element to it. I mean, I used to listen to Limit Break Radio when they were on. Great show. I missed them really, you know. Used to listen to it all the time back when I was playing. But, you know, it just didn't really have what it has, which basically it seems like Final Fantasy XIV or Realm Reborn is doing it. We had 12, which was set. See, that's the one I was confused on. That was sort of set, I think, like a sort of Aladdin type era. It was like deserts and but, you know, collapsed temples, and I don't really remember what the whole point of 11 was. 12, and then we had 13, which was about lightning, and you had the world with 13 was really nice. I actually liked the world, but it was just so linear and it just didn't feel right with how it was. And now with this, the way Lightning Returns is, and I do probably just need to sit down, take some time, read the Wikipedia on it, because, you know, what's going on. Maybe I should contact the people from Edgeworld Monster and get them to do something on Final Fantasy, you know, Final Fantasy 13. That'd be really good. But yeah, I say, you know, and Final Fantasy 14, I never played it when it was originally came out, and now we have a Realm Reborn. I might give it a go when I, you know, sort of take some time off from playing so many different games and just sort of focus on one. But, you know, as I'm trying to save money and, you know, trying to put money into an MMO that I might play for so long, it probably isn't the best thing. But yeah, I mean, I miss the old sort of classic Final Fantasy games. I mean, maybe that's what they say, because people seem to be slating, you know, some people slate 7, say it was the worst one, or 8 was the worst one, or 9 was the worst one. But, you know, they always say, you know, the first time's your best. But yeah, it's just, I miss how the games used to be. I mean, it's one of those things, it's like, so much innovation is pretty much, you know, there's too much innovation can, you know, too many cooks spoil the broth. It's that thing. It's like, yeah, you want to take the turn-based battle system away from Final Fantasy, but it wasn't. I mean, I didn't really have a problem with how the battle system exactly was in 13. It's just that I didn't want my character to do this, but you only let me do my character do this. And they're saying about other people explaining to other people. You know, I've been reading a lot on game facts and all sorts of message board stuff. It's like you had to do armor breaks on the enemy to break their armor, break their defenses. I'm like, can't I just sort of, you know, level up my character to super high level and then just use a massive sword and just smash them over the head with it? I mean, that's the basic whole premise with RPGs. If you take it away from RPGs, you know, if you take that whole premise of leveling up to get stronger, to get better away from RPGs, it's not an RPG anymore. It's, I mean, you know, it's the underlying secret of what makes an RPG an RPG. I mean, you know, with my Pokemon game, when I fought the Elite Four for the first time, I found out how high they were. So I leveled myself up about 10 levels higher than I needed to be. 10 levels higher than the Elite Four were, and then just basically went through and one-shotted the whole lot of them all the way through. and pretty much did that with my because I did that with the Y version first, and then pretty much did that with the X version. But that's the whole point for RPGs. It's like, as I say, I'll go back to Defenders of Oasis. I was there's a bit where you have to go to this desert island to try and get into this tomb, and I couldn't beat this boss. But yeah, I had to keep fighting to level up my characters. I mean, playing this game, I was 11 or 12 years old, back in secondary school. And I had no idea what I was doing because this sort of type of game was foreign to me. I carried on with the character and just played till I got stronger and stronger, sort of subconsciously realizing what was going on and that, and then just, beat the bosses. I mean, I think about stuff like with Final Fantasy, there was... you were in one of the temples in Final Fantasy VII. You had to fight. I think the boss was called the Wall, but it was basically some big giant wall that you'd fight in the what was it? Not City of the Ancients. It was some sort of temple because basically it shrunk down into a sphere of dark matter or something, which was put into Sephiroth's against his body, and it woke him up. But yeah, it was, that boss was tricky, but I had to sort of, go back to an earlier save and, to keep leveling up to get stronger. That's what we do when it comes to this sort of stuff. I mean, if we need sort of techniques and snags to work out, how to beat bosses and stuff like this, we might as well be playing like a beat 'em up or something. And that, most beat 'em ups that I play are the button bashing kind, me Tekken's, Dead or Alive used to how Dead or Alive used to be, that sort of stuff. But I mean, it's also I was thinking about the other stuff. I mean, the big thing that draws me, I'm a sort of old fashioned romantic. The love stories is what does it for me as well for the Final Fantasy. You had the sort of in 7, you had the love trial between Tifa, Cloud, and Aeris. In 8, it was with Squall and Ranoa. Then in 9, it was Dagger and Zidane. And then in 10, you had Tidus and I can't even remember her name. And the other one, there wasn't any 11 because it was the online one. In 12, it missed out. There could have been something. There was like an underlying sort of thing, but it wasn't really fleshed out as much. But that was, 12, they sort of totally skipped it. 13, it was like, it was Snow and Lightning's sister. I think there was sort of something between Lightning and Snow themselves, but that sort of wasn't really there as such because it was sort of Snow was in love with Lightning's sister, which was weird because she was like half his size. As I say, I miss the old how Final Fantasy games used to be, and they were fun and you could have enjoyed with them and. The characters and that's the thing. It's like these, I can't remember what happened in 12. 12, 13 was, I didn't finish 13, but I've got clear memories in my head of 7, 8, and 9, half of 10. It drifts in and out of my consciousness trying to think about how great these games were, and they're trying to change stuff with Final Fantasy 13 when it comes to the combat. But it's the fantasy element that makes a Final Fantasy game the whole point. But that's the main chunk of what makes a Final Fantasy game Final Fantasy. The combat stuff is less of it, but it's still part. But you don't really need to change it just to suit others. I mean, because as I said earlier, Final Fantasy is the main role play game known to the gaming community. It is the number one. It's what people play. People love the games, people hate the games. Every game is different. It has different workings and methods. I mean, I'm interested in seeing the combat system in Final Fantasy 15. The story looks interesting. I'm sort of more of a lover of the story now than I am a little while ago. Because, I mean, to be honest, when I first saw the trailer for 13, the original, you know, Final Fantasy, the original Final Fantasy 13, I was like, this game looks terrible. I mean, no, it looked amazing, but the story-wise, it looked terrible. And it sort of, you know, it panned out. I should probably just trust my emotions a lot more. But then, you know, we go with other stuff, you know, that we got with, you know, 15. There's some sort of political system and sort of cities and the combat. See, it's still too early to tell because we haven't really, we've got bits and pieces here and there, but from my personal standpoint, it's, I want to see more of everything else. And, you know, I mean, because, you know, I'll go back to Pokemon. It's like, when that first came out, we got bits and pieces of the game. We got trailers showing off the gameplay and the battles and, you know, basically all the new features. But there was nothing of the story because basically there is no story. I mean, that's what this is totally disappointing about the Pokemon, the new Pokemon game. It's like, it doesn't, you know, because everyone says the sports games, yes, this one, take the new Madden, it took a leap over the last three and it's totally progressed the series. Whereas this new Pokemon does feel like a point addition. It's, you know, it's Pokemon, it's 5.6, it's not something that does something. It just basically adds the fairy type 3D battles, you know, character customization, that sort of stuff. That's all it really does. It makes, you know, the character your own. Whereas I and many others, I believe, have a strong feeling that the next Pokemon game, you know, the Gen 7 Pokemon game will be the one that we want. I mean, because I was listening to It's Super Effective, which is a great show if you're a Pokemon fan. It's really, really good and you should have a listen. And they were talking about how the gym leaders in this one, there was pretty much nothing to it. I mean, I think it was either Kenny or Travis was saying that basically there was more interaction with the gym leaders in Black and Black 2 and White and White 2 than there was in this one. It was basically, yep, you get to a gym, you fight the gym leader, and you get the badge. I mean, they said, comparing how it was like to Gen 1, it was basically the same thing. There was no interaction, there was no, you know, there was no people actually caring, and, you know, that's what I want to see from when it comes to RPGs and, you know, Pokemon games. But, with, you know, with Final Fantasy, I got a weird feeling. It's like they're looking to the future on how to, you know, reassert themselves as a role-play game when it comes to the combat and pretty much everything else. But I would like to see them actually looking back on when it comes to the storytelling. And I mean, I'm a big sort of weird when it comes to sort of the worlds that it's set in. I have a big thing for, like, the high future technology, like Mass Effect, that sort of, those sort of worlds. But I also like the classic medieval magic stuff as well, and, you know, the whole steampunk, that sort of stuff does it for me. That's quite nice. Whereas I can't really describe how the world was with 13, because I didn't really get to, because there's a whole open world that you do get to, but I didn't get that far. So I don't know, me trying to explain that was probably a bit, you know, awkward here and there. But, you know, hopefully, see, I don't know. I'm talking about this stuff, and I'm still not even sure, because I'm thinking about Final Fantasy 15 now, and I'm like, even when it comes out, I want it to be a good game. It looks okay, but with what we're getting and gonna get, will it be? I don't know. I really want it to be the game that pulls me back into the Final Fantasy series, and not basically just pushes me away like 12 has and 13 has. I want to feel part of the series. I want it to be, yeah, this is back to the Final Fantasy we all know and love. I mean, it's the same with anything. It's like, I'll take the Ratchet and Clank games, for instance. I loved the PlayStation 2 Ratchet and Clank games that we got, but Future Tools of Destruction was okay. It wasn't the greatest Ratchet and Clank game ever. And Crack in Time was abysmal. It was terrible. But this new one, I'm hoping it will sort of reinvigorate my love for Ratchet and Clank. I mean, you know, I've never stopped loving Ratchet and Clank because it's Ratchet and Clank. They're one of the greatest platforming duos since, you know, Banjo and Kazooie. But, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like, you know, I don't know. It, you know, after so long, bits and pieces start to fall off. It's just, it's a bit weird. It's just, I mean, because this goes into to next week's topic, which is going to be where did I write it? Oh, here we go. Yeah, the future of gaming. Because, you know, I talked about the evolution of gaming many months ago, how, you know, for different parts and how it affects different things. But what I said last week about Call of Duty, it's like what we've had, you know, we've had for the past, you know, 10 years of non-stop first-person, modern combat shooters, and basically there's only a few different, a few different companies that do the shooters. Users say, so, you know, you've got EA who do the sports stuff, and that's basically what I'm going to talk about. It's like, well, once everyone's bored of them, what happens? What do we happen? I mean, I'm going to post this as a topic in the Facebook group, because this is going to be a pretty good thing to talk about for next week. But yeah, I mean, I miss how the Final Fantasy used to be. I really do. I mean, you know, it's one of the greatest series ever. I mean, I think about, you know, Dark Souls, Demon Souls. They have that classic old school how games were really hard back in the day. I mean, you know, there's hard games now. I mean, there's bits of Assassin's Creed. It's like, yeah, shit, I can't get past this. You know, whereas, you know, Grand Theft Auto, that gives you the option to skip stuff. I wouldn't mind if Assassin's Creed had that, just so I can get myself into past this bit that I'm having trouble with. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong in skipping a part that you find hard. It's just if you're interested in the story, like I am, I want to get past this bit to get past it, not skip it all the way through and, you know, sort of break it into segments. But yeah, I'd say I miss how Final Fantasy used to be. But I mean, time will tell, as time does with everything. Time will tell how Final Fantasy, you know, Lightning Returns, how that sells, how that's received. You know, it comes out next year, early next year, so between now and April, I believe. What we'll see. But I mean, you know, with Final Fantasy 15 as well, what will that do? I mean, are we still waiting on new trailers, more gameplay footage, battle footage, you know, tons of stuff on that. But I don't know. It's, you know, time will tell. All right, I'm going to go on a quick break because I've been talking long enough. Also, in this break, there's an ad for the Gentleman Show. They're having a vote now for the new Useless Chick for their fourth mic spot. So make sure you listen to it carefully. And, you know, go and vote for them, because I really appreciate it. They're good friends of mine. And I voted already. I'm not going to tell you who I voted for, because I don't want to show favoritism. But, yeah, no, have a listen, and I'll be back in a few minutes after these messages.
That combination. And Ashley, you're from England, so we're not really sure what asshole number you would be. We just know it would be at least two extra numbers and one extra dash.
Yeah,
that's all we know for sure. Yeah. It's some sort of country code.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to have a go.
If you'd like to Skype in, it's Antisocial Gamer Radio. All one word.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to AdamandEve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus, a free extra gift so sensual, we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out AdamandEve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type DEAL48 for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code DEAL48 at AdamandEve.com.
The Cousin Joe Show.
And I'm sitting in the chair. He did the barber cock touch.
What the fuck?
This is what it is.
Dude, where do you go to get your haircut?
Listen to me.
Where are you going?
See how I'm sitting right now?
Yeah, I do.
Where are my elbows?
Outside the...
They always go around the side. And where the fucking... The height of my elbow is always their dick. He reaches in and his cock touches my elbow. And the thing is, like, I can't immediately jerk away because that looks like...
Now you know you touched it.
Right, I'm acknowledging a cock touch. So instead, I just leave it there and let him rub his dick on my elbow.
Dude! Did he go back and forth?
That's when you could tell.
Did he go back and forth ever, like, fast?
Not fast. I wonder if guys do play games or get the barber hard, kind of wiggle their elbow.
Nobody does that, Joe. Nobody does that.
Well, weird faggots. Who knows?
You're fucking weird.
Insane.
Tune in to the Cousin Joe Show live Thursday night, 7 to 10 on More Like Radio.
High Society Radio is now part of MoreLikeRadio.com.
Who's all part of the More Like Radio cavalcade of stars? Oh. Who are you joining there?
Oh, well, Hippo Juice, they're the soul behind More right. Like Radio. And we're jumping on there. High Society Radio, that is.
What other kind of shows are over there, though?
Oh, there's plenty. There's just a roster that's ridiculous. There's 360 on 420. Mm-hmm. There's a gentleman show. There's Ain't Social Gamer Radio. There's the Red Show. There's Daytime Divas.
Okay, so you're not out there by yourself in the cold anymore.
No.
You're fucking with...
A family.
Yeah, a real family. A family of gangsters.
Take the edge off. MoreLikeRadio.com. It's like rap music you can understand.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
Now I'm realizing that this is all going to be on fucking podcast. Oh, boy.
I told you. I was trying to warn you the whole time.
Dude, I don't care. I'm voluntarily Skyping into you. Use this to make a promo. I don't care. No. Mm-hmm. Dude, like I said, my fiance doesn't listen. Dutch got drunk one night. Well, he gets drunk every night. But he got drunk one night, and I used it as a promo. Why not? Use this into a promo. I give everyone permission to turn this audio into a promo. I don't care.
He also used Drunk Me for a promo, too, if you remember.
Punch JJ, you play it every week.
I do. Folks at home, Radio Gold like this happens every Sunday and Thursday at midnight on 360 on 420, only on MoreLikeRadio.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special bulletin.
It's the Gentleman's Show, Useless Chick Search 2013. Thousands tried out four, and we're down to the final two. Who will be the new fourth mic? Marcy.
It's all about the boobies.
Or Kylie.
They have a lot of experience and a lot of things.
Their fate is in your hands.
I want them to rub up and down my body.
Vote now at facebook.com/gentlemanontheair.
And if you share that faith with me, I ask you tonight for your vote.
That's facebook.com/gentlemanontheair. Polls close November 20th at 5 p.m. So vote now or don't.
Wrestling's fake.
Oh, yeah?
Jesus!
The organization that brought you Tangled Web, Tournament of Death, and Prelude to Violence. 15 years of hardcore tradition. The Combat Zone is professional wrestling's proving grounds. Combat Zone doesn't do PG. No ballroom dancers or pimps shucking and jiving in our ring. Just the biggest names in independent professional wrestling. Masada.
Oh my God! What the hell? Yes. What the hell?
Adam Cole.
Only in pro wrestling can two men kill each other and then follow it up with a hug covered in blood.
Danny Havoc.
Oh no! 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 Stop. Oh, no!
Drake Younger.
Just moving your body on the canvas. Painful?
CZW features the ultimate hybrid style of high-flying mat wrestling combined with hardcore, death-defying action the other promotions wish they were allowed to show you. Get the latest news on live events, internet pay-per-views, and more. Or score yourself a classic CZW t-shirt from their online store. Support the ultra-violent underground. Go to CZWrestling.com or follow Combat Zone on Twitter.
CZW!
Hey man, when you need to look your finest, what do?
Well, I grab my favorite t-shirt, of course.
You know, I just knew you were gonna say that, and I was gonna ask, have you ever checked out T-Fury?
I think so. That's the website with the new t-shirt every day, right?
That's the one. At tfury.com, there's a brand new t-shirt design every day, and each one lasts for only 24 hours, then it's gone forever.
So it's tea today, gone tomorrow?
Exactly.
That's a lot of t-shirts. Where do they all come from?
Well, each design is submitted by a freelance artist, so no two are exactly alike. And the best part? All these tees feature nothing but nerd references. Whether it's movies, TV shows, video games, cartoons, comics, or culture, they're all awesome. And get this, each tee is just 11 bucks.
Dude, it looks like I need to update my wardrobe. What's that website again?
Just use tinyurl.com/MLRTees. That's tinyurl.com/MLRTEES. Each limited edition tee lasts for only 24 hours, so get over there before time runs out.
Check out today's T-Fury design right now at tinyurl.com/MLRTees.
If you weren't able to catch the last Hippo Juice show, here's what you probably missed.
The credibility that they are using as a bouncer at a Colombian strip club. Credibility.
Oh my god, that's hilarious! Let's say it three more times.
Oh, God, to save you, gotta save my soul. Oh, down, bow, down, wow, diddy, wow, down, wow.
Listen to the Hippo Juice Show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. on morelikeradio.com.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. I haven't been to bed. Me and Mike met up with these two Scottish guys in the pub and they gave us all this cheap speed.
Tim, that's so tacky.
Yeah, I know. You know, they were so nice. I think if we'd have said no, they'd have got offended and beaten us to death with a pool cue.
Where's Mike now? Oh, hi, Brian.
Put him up back. What are you playing?
It's a subtle blend of lateral thinking and extreme violence.
What? Like it's a knockout.
Did you want something?
No, not really.
Oh, there's a letter here for you. It came yesterday.
It's open.
Yeah, I opened it by accident because we've both got eyes in our names.
It's from Vulva.
Oh, yeah, it's under the women's magazine.
Vulva, it's an old friend. She's having a show tonight.
You got a friend called Vulva? Who's called Vulva?
Real name's Ian.
You mean her real name's Ian?
She's non-gender specific.
Oh, what, you mean he's a tranny?
More than that.
What, big fat tranny?
Vulva. Had a multimedia performance art partnership before she moved on. Such aesthetic wonders. Such vibrant times.
Yeah, I can imagine.
No, we did valuable work. She was the beautiful one, really. I just danced to her tune. It was purity. It was physical. I mean, not in a sexual sense. No, we were collaborative. I don't expect you to understand. Most people don't want to hear, they just switch off. It's hard to hear the story of a love affair between two straight men, one of whom is the most divine woman alive.
So you're gonna go?
I don't know, I haven't seen her for ages.
No, I mean, are you gonna go now?
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to the second part of Antisocial Game Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. Matt is in chat. You said just before the break. Anyway, says that Dark Souls is definitely trying to get into the getting on the ghosts and ghouls irritatingly hard. Yeah, I mean I've never really got further in Dark Souls than I think past the first boss and to the new area. I didn't really get too far into it. And say it is really, really hard, but I think that the Dark Souls 2 supposedly is going to be a bit easier and should be, you know, easy enough for me, to be honest. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the new one, to be honest. It does look pretty good. But you know, as I said before the break, I did have something on Call of Duty. This is from Games Radar. Call of Duty Ghosts makes $1 billion in record sales. Question mark? Not quite. Call of Duty Ghosts has done it. Activision and Infinity Ward have achieved yet another record with their flagship shooter series. $1 billion sold to retail in the first day. I mean, it's faster than GTA 5, which took over 3 days to hit $1 billion. But yeah, basically this is sort of load of bullshit from Activision. Basically what's happened is, Activision is saying that it sold $1 billion worth to retailers, and basically those are totally different numbers. So Activision announced that Call of Duty Ghosts generated $1 billion in worldwide revenue on a launch day, but that number isn't exactly what you think it is. The billion dollar the publisher is referring to is the units sold to stock retailers' shelves, not the actual amount of money that came out of gamers' pockets to keep their adrenaline junkie need to pwn noobs in competitive multiplayer, but the Call of Duty franchise has been breaking day one sale numbers since the release of Modern Warfare 2. So why aren't we seeing the actual dollar sales that have come from the gamers? Well, immediately and obviously it's because Call of Duty Ghosts doesn't appear to have done as well as its predecessors. CVG News reported that Activision CFO Dennis Durkin is blaming the console tradition and digital distribution for the year's lower retail numbers, meaning Activision sold more to retail than last year's Black Ops 2, which, to be honest, from what I've been actually seeing from several different people, have said that, you know, even Black Ops 2 wasn't that big of a seller either. Activision CEO Bobby I'm the Devil Kotick mentioned November 6th. It says the day after Ghosts launch, it was too early to access the sell-through numbers to consumers. Both comments point to an uncharacteristically not as successful launch of a Call of Duty game. Don't get me wrong, I'm pretty sure Call of Duty Ghosts sold hundreds of millions of dollars within the first few days of its launch, just not the $1 billion that it was after. And Activision announced that the shooter sold $1 billion to retailers. It was not a so sly way of hiding that the newest entry in the series wasn't breaking any day one sell-through records. Until the official sales numbers are released, we won't know how well the this year's Call of Duty performed compared to the predecessors. But from this announcement, the relative silence in terms of day one sales bragging, my guess is that the money is a little short of expectations. As Durkin stated, there are a couple of reasons why this may be the cause. Franchise fatigue is the one that trolls will have the most fun time with, but reality is Call of Duty Ghosts is recently a pretty awkward buying period in the market. It's a cross-generation game, meaning that the console pool has been split. Some of the Call of Duty's buyers out there have picked the new game for the next-gen systems, while others are undoubtedly waiting for the new consoles that are around the corner. Activision even saw this coming and is offering a $10 upgrade to preferred next-gen consoles when you get the new hardware. The question that then becomes whether the scheme will take on as well as publishers hope it will. But, that's one of my things as well. It's like, well, you know, that's something that I really didn't think about until now. You know, Call of Duty is coming out on the next-gen consoles. Next-gen consoles aren't out yet. I think about Watch Dogs, that was supposed to be the next big, that was going to be the big main seller for the PlayStation, and the Xbox, PlayStation 4, Xbox One when it came out. That was the game that everyone was going to pick up. But I mean, as it's been delayed, you know, will it split, you know, split the buyers? It's coming out on 4 different consoles, so the money will come in, but it just depends on whether you want to buy it. But the thing is though, right, it's like I said before, with Call of Duty coming out on the next gen console, it's probably going to be at a higher price. So what are you going to do? Are you going to wait for a game that's going to be a higher price that will come out a bit later, or are you going to buy a game that's going to be a lower price which is out right now? And that's my main thinking. It's like, if people wanted to buy Call of Duty, they would have bought it already. I mean, just, I was in my local game after the day of the say of the launch, trying to find replacement power brick from the Xbox, but that didn't really pan out. So, obviously that didn't pan out. But there was people in there buying Call of Duty. There was a queue about 10 people or so. There was probably dozens and dozens queuing up for the midnight launches across the world, but that's the thing. I'm gonna side with what's going on with the whole the shooter fatigue. It's like, yeah, this is like the 11th Call of Duty game that we've had. people are tired. I mean, I haven't, you know, because I'm not, I have no real interest in buying this one. So my last main Call of Duty was Modern Warfare 3, which was 2 years ago now. Hang on. Yeah, 2 years ago now. So if I'm dropping off, other people have dropped off. They probably, people have dropped off before, you know, I started dropping off, or, you know, it's just, we're tired of the same old stuff, basically. And, you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing the numbers. I mean, because it was a tricky week. It was a tricky week, to be honest, to try and get some stuff for news this week. Because, I mean, you know, with my usual places where I go, there's not much of anything. It's quite, you know, few and far between. Okay, well, so I'm just trying to find... yeah, here we go. Some EA stuff here. Because there's literally nothing on the separate console stuff, but there's been tons of stuff put from developers and everyone. EA confirms FIFA 2014 World Cup game. This is from Games Radar, by the way. EA will release FIFA 2014 World Cup game next year. CEO Andrew Wilson confirmed during the company's second quarter earnings call last night. This is from... basically, 30th of October. So that shows you how low news articles there has been. I'm getting something from like 2 weeks ago. The executive said via Seeking Alpha, in the last 2 weeks, you've seen several announcements that about our products slate for the remainder of this year and into the financial year in 2015. We are refining our focus on our biggest brands and great new IP in development, including The Sims 4, EA Sports UFC, and FIFA World Cup, and Dragon Age Inquisition. EA has released tie-in games for every FIFA World Cup and UEFA European Championship since 98, with, you know, FIFA Road to World Cup 98, which was an amazing. I love that game on the PlayStation. The first seven titles released under the FIFA and UEFA licenses came in the form of standalone retail games, but the most recent UEFA Euro 2012 launched as £15.99 digital expansion for FIFA 12. Earlier this week, EA Sports released a new gameplay trailer for FIFA 14, showing off the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 versions of this year's game in action ahead of their release next month, which is this month now. But yeah, I mean, it's the usual stuff. I mean, this whole thing adds to basically next week's topic. It's like EA is one of the big giants of making the same game year after year. You know, there's always going to be a FIFA game. There's always going to be a UEFA game. There's always going to be a Madden. You know, any sort of thing. There's going to be a main game for it during the sports stuff. I mean, yes, they do have some other IPs that are non-sport related that we don't get every so often, but that's, you know, they're good to see. I mean, we have the Dead Space and that. I'm looking forward to Dead Space 4. That game's going to be amazing. But, I mean, it just makes me feel bad about this sort of stuff. It's like, if we're getting this same stuff every year, we know what we're getting. I mean, the new Tiger Woods on the new next-gen console stuff looks pretty good. You know, because they've shown what it looks like on current stuff, but on the next gen, it's sort of more prettier. As really, it's one of those things. It's like, well, how pretty can you get a golf game? You know, I keep thinking back to the Simpsons episode with that putting game that Bart got. But yeah, I mean, it's the same old, same old. I mean, it's going to sell as it usually does. You know, I think about other stuff as well. You know, you have Nintendo doing the Sonic versus Sonic and Mario at the Olympics, at the Winter Olympics. That comes there. That's a game that comes out every 2 years. You know, there's not much. Yeah, there's not much. There's not much to it, to be honest, when it comes to diversity amongst games these days. Where was I? Here we go. Yeah. Hopefully, I'm just looking at some big load of because my usual stuff from Games Radar is pretty, you know, thin and far between. So going to IGN, but I'm just hoping none of these fucking ads pop up. If this bloody thing loads, here we go. Oh, piss off this take a survey. No, you can fucking serve my nuts. Nope, I did it well. Fucking heads. Kingdoms of Amalur auction moved to December. The Kingdoms of Amalur IP is still up for grabs. 38 Studios Kingdoms of Amalur auction was slated to take place this month, but has been moved to December because of higher potential interest than was expected, a lawyer said. That's weird, because I thought no one wanted this. Auction officials told GameSpot that the auction will take place at some point in December. Richard J. Land, the lawyer representing the state of Rhode Island in the case following 38 Studios' bankruptcy, moved to delay the auction to accommodate the surprising interest, which, to be honest, is surprising me. Any proceeds acquired from selling the IP previously owned by 38 Studios will go towards the state of Rhode Island. Rights to the IP include assets such as MMO projects, Cornucopius, sequel rights to Kingdom of Amalur, and various rights to big, huge games, properties such as Rise of Nations and Rise of Legends and Catan. There is no concrete date on for December auction, which will be held by Heritage Global Partners. So, this whole thing is up in the air. I'm really surprised about how this is going, to be honest. I didn't think that anyone would actually, anyone would actually care about this sort of stuff when it comes to, I don't think the game sold too well, to be honest. I was actually interested in getting it, but because I think it came out the same time, Skyrim? Because, I mean, Skyrim has been out for like 2 years now, believe it or not. Even though I completely finished it like a year ago. But yeah, that's what it was. It was literally going up against Skyrim, and that wasn't the best time in the world. But that's, that shows you how long it has been for this whole disaster that was Kingdoms of Amalur. What else we got? Let's have a look. I've got some stuff on Blockbuster, but if you listen to other shows on the network, Blockbuster's gone under, so there's no point me talking about that. There's really nothing. We've got the GTA. So this thing, I've got all this new stuff, but half of it's just all crap anyway. We've got the Call of Duty stuff. Call of Duty. So the Grand Theft Auto, the money started going out to people. I haven't checked yet. Because I'm so worried about turning on the Xbox. Just trying to look at other bits and pieces. Let's do some fun stuff. I've had this for a while. Oh, where is it gone? Sorry, I've just totally misplaced it. Here we go. No, this is something I wanted to talk about last week. I completely forgot because I ran out of time. I got this from True Achievements, trueachievements.com, great for you for keeping up with your achievement whoring, like I do. Ubisoft discontinues Uplay Passport. Now, it's basically the season pass for, Ubisoft's version of the season pass. As fast as online passes blaze onto the scene, it seems we are seeing a welcome trend with them being phased out just as quickly as by some publishers. Surprisingly, EA was at the forefront of this reversal, announcing back in May that their future titles would no longer require an online pass. They even went as far as to make the online pass of some older titles free. With the release of Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, publisher Ubisoft included a game mode called Edward's Fleet. I haven't tried this because I'll explain in a second. I'll carry on reading the article. An innovative online feature that allows a single player to interact with multiple players on consoles or via the game's companion app, which I haven't downloaded either. In order to access the game mode, you would need to activate Ubisoft's version of an online pass, the Ubisoft Passport. That comes free with every new copy of the game. Like other online passes, buying used or buying a single copy that was shared between multiple individuals meant that you would have to pay an additional fee for this feature. Ubisoft has listened to concerns over the additional cost that would be incurred by people in those situations and decided to eliminate the need for the Uplay passport. In Assassin's Creed 4, they further stated that Uplay passport will no longer be a part of the future Ubisoft games. The Uplay passport for Assassin's Creed 4 will be available to download free next week. This article came out from last week. It says there will be no word on as to whether Ubisoft will start releasing old Uplay passports for free as well, but if they should happen, they will be sure to pass the information along. Now, this is weird, right? I was expecting, because I've known about this for a while, but I was expecting... I was expecting some sort of updates, like, to the actual, with the first day updates, you put your game in, it says, yep, we need to update you. I was expecting, when this was announced, some sort of patch that would say, that because basically, when I play, as anyone who's playing Assassin's Creed 4 at the moment will know, you put the game in, and it comes up, it says, do you want to activate your passport, do you want to do something else, or do you want to just skip it for now? It keeps coming up with that. I'm expecting some sort of patch to stop this from coming up. It would make it easier. I mean, I'm not going to put the passport thing because it doesn't matter anymore. But you think they would have patched it with some sort of to stop this part of the menu popping up saying we can use this. But I'm glad it actually because I think during that time it does actually read my actual Uplay account. Because it does say, well, when it goes later, it says yes. Now, it could be because you've played previous games, you get the access to, Altair's, Etio's, and Connor's Assassin's suits. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice if they did take it out and, something for, I don't know. So just to skip over, but I don't see what's so difficult about it. I've got something here from Gama Sutra, which Matty just sent to us. Amazon now offering digital PlayStation games. Sony has entered into an... he's messing me on Skype. Sony has entered into an agreement with Amazon, by which the latter is now offering a dedicated PlayStation Network storefront on its website. Through which PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation Vita games users can buy digital games. Up to this point, PlayStation Network users looking to purchase the digital PlayStation games had to do so through the official PlayStation Store, either through a browser or through a PlayStation console. With today's launch of the PlayStation Network storefront from Amazon, users can now buy PlayStation Network codes directly from Amazon and activate them on a PlayStation device. See, I'll carry on reading this article and then I'll add my conjecture. As part of the launch, the pair of companies are also running a variety of deals to get consumers on board, such as buy two, get one free on PlayStation 4 games, and a $5 credit back on selected PlayStation Network purchases. Notably, this agreement only applies to the US, Amazon, and PlayStation stores for now. Neither word is what's happening with other regions. But the thing is, though, right, with this, why would you go... I mean, yes, the idea of, such as buy two, get one free, that's interesting. But why would you do something like that for... Why would you need to do that? Why wouldn't you just go to if you wanted to buy a PlayStation game, digitally, why would you go any other place apart from the PlayStation Store? I mean, if you're part of the PlayStation the Play Plus or whatever the hell that thing is, I know I need to join up with it soon anyway. But it's like, if you're getting, because you're getting discounts with them anyway, why would you need to do this anyway? I don't see the point, to be honest. I don't know, it's probably just me. But it does seem a bit weird and random and, But, I'll finish off what I said about the Ubisoft stuff. I'm sort of glad they get rid of these passports because it's one big money grab, but, Sorry, I'm trying to find some decent RQ. Here we go. Yes, here we are. Borderlands. Borderlands 2, Headhunter 2 DLC, Headhunter DLC release revealed. The Headhunter 2-pack for Borderlands 2 will be released in November, according to Take-Two's official upcoming list of future titles. Those fucking ads. Fuck you, IGN, you bunch of cunts. Fuck that article then. See, this is the thing, it's trying to find articles now, it doesn't pop up with fucking ads. It's a pain in the arse. Alright, let's try and find something else. Yeah, let's finish off the show, because we've got about 20 minutes left. Let's finish off the show with something a bit fun. Here we go. I've been sitting on a bunch of these poll lists for a while. This is from True Achievements. Top 5 pointless collectibles. I like this one, because some of this stuff is, I've played games and I've actually gone out and sought after these collectibles. Collectibles, just the utterance of one word causes everyone, even the best gaming veterans, to shudder. Whether it's entering their ears, collectibles are one of those video game nuisances that we gamers simply cannot avoid. Whether that's picking up an item from different areas, performing a certain action in a particular place, or completing any other activity in a gaming world. They have become well and truly integrated into video games and have been for a very long time. Sometimes, though, we also come across collectibles that we simply do not want at all. Some would argue that for all collectibles, because they have nothing to add to the experience whatsoever. Developers like to give collectibles as a purpose and so reward you with something depending on what you collect. On the other hand, there are also shoehorning items and activities as though they're trying to prolong the completion that we sorely desire. We've come up with a list of collectibles which are essentially not needed to, but as they add nothing to the game other than a gut-wrenching, boring and very long search. Number 5, L.A. Noire, the film reels. I mean, of course, I didn't really like L.A. Noire as a whole, but I did actually go out and sought after this because it was an achievement. But yeah, L.A. Noire got some stellar reviews when it launched 2 years ago. Amazing face-capturing technology, an intriguing gameplay mechanic, a beautiful reimagined 1940s Los Angeles, and Hollywood film reels lying on the floor. It has to be said that it was rather creative that the team, Team Bondi, referred a huge number of classic oldies from the movies, so the reels fit the setting. Apart from that, they served no real purpose. I remember running driving all over the city for a good few hours to find these, although it was interesting to see that future, different film names. My first, once, it was no in-game rewards, for what I could see, as long as all we got was a 30 game score achievement, as a well done for picking these things up. Well, it's an achievement. Yeah, it was an achievement. That's the only reason that anyone did it, just for the simple achievement. It's the same reason that people got, Avatar The Last Airbender and picked that up for the quick and easy 1,000 gamer score. I mean, I didn't buy it, I rented it and got the easy 1,000. This is number 4, it's from Mirror's Edge. It's the bags. I don't know about this because I never played Mirror's Edge. I've got the soundtrack, I've got the song, the main song from the soundtrack on my iPod, but I've never played the game. I played the demo. The aim of the game in Mirror's Edge is speed. The faster you run through the levels of the game, the higher your score will be. You just look a lot more stylish doing so. So what's better way to screw that aspect up than making you search for random bags that are hidden in some pretty silly places? Faith is meant to sprint and jump over buildings at breakneck speed, not surge under nooks and crannies for pointless items. The game does help you slightly though with the use of through the showing the game's main logo on the wall where you are near a bag, but even those logos are so small and obscure that they become as hard as to find as bags as far as the bags themselves. At least there are only 3 per level, meaning 30 for the entire game. If you sucked at the game like me, you don't expect to find these naturally. Number 3. Now, this, I didn't actually go out my way to find these ones. I did the film reels. But Alan Wake, the coffee thermoses. Running around in a spooky forest, only possessed lunatics with axes to keep it company must be hard. You must have ticked off remedy quite a bit to cause them to chuck it in a ton of collectibles for you to search for as well. Yeah, Alan Wake had tons of collectibles. Like, there was the thermoses, there was the notes. It was tons of stuff. Alan Wake isn't by no means short of collectibles. Manuscript pages, information signs around Bright Falls, supply boxes, tin can pyramids, radio stations, TV shows. You know, tons. Probably the worst and most pointless of them all, though, is 100 coffee thermoses. These flasks are scattered all over the game across game 6 episodes and serve no in-game purpose whatsoever. Unless Alan is getting secretly ultra-energized from them, if you happen to be a fan of Twin Peaks show, then you may be aware that these thermoses are a reference to the show. If not, then you do now. See, that's the thing as well. I tried to watch Twin Peaks. I mean, I got a bit into the first episode, but I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I should have just sat with it longer, but I just sort of got bored and didn't really bother with it. This one I did actually go through, and it took me ages. Number 2, Grand Theft Auto 4, The Pigeons. The flying rats of Grand Theft Auto 4 must be something of the most random collectibles around. Perched on bridges, tables, walls, and any other surface you can think of in Liberty City. You will see these birds casually standing there minding their own business until Nico Bellic comes close, causes them to explode with a single bullet. You could say that Rockstar tried to ease the monotony by having you find something to shoot at instead of picking up. But no, having to scour the entire city for 200 of these is still as monotonous as ever. You do obtain something, a rather shiny looking 50 G's, 50 game score, achievement for collecting them instead of these hidden packages. But it would have been even better to get an amazing in-game car, or maybe even a secret boss fight with the mother of all pigeons, because you decimated 200 of her babies. But yeah, I mean, we did that with Grand Theft Auto 5. You went and collect all the spaceship parts, and all you got was a car, and you know, the car was a shit. It was a wreck. But you know, they moan about here that they didn't get anything, but we did that in 5, and we got a car that was pretty crap. But you know, but number 1, Assassin's Creed, the flags. I got all the achievements of this game. I got this as well. The infamous flags of the first game in Assassin's Creed franchise are the pinnacle of pointless item gathering, or at least extremely close to that pinnacle. Altair certainly has his work cut out for him with these nasty things. He will have to find out about 400 flags to be able to say that he's completed the search. I spent a week of dedicating search, week of dedicated searching until I finally triumphed over what ended up being one of the most pointless hunts for collectibles ever. You bag quite a few achievements for finding different groups of flags, but that's really all you get, as there is nothing rewarding in game from these. As is the trend for this list, it makes you think that the developers sorely put these in to encourage extra exploration. But what we spent entirely of the game doing, we neither want nor need these. The world of the game is rife with collectibles, so we have all come across many pointless and annoying ones across all the games we have played. The Fable series certainly enjoyed its collectibles, and the more recent GTA 5 seems to have all sorts scattered across San Andreas. I'd make a few more honourable mentions, but it will leave it to you guys. That's it, really. I mean, I do like a decent collectible. I mean, I'm a bit of a sucker for collectibles. I mean, they are fun and enjoyable. Sorry, I'm just reading about Matty's in chat. Says, yeah, America got bored with Twin Peaks. Yeah, I mean, it pretty much got cancelled. But yeah, I mean, you know, I tried to watch it. It was supposed to be some monsters and mythical stuff, but I watched part of the first episode. It was like a murder, and I was like, I don't care what's going on. It wasn't really doing anything. Just reading the stuff in the chat. But no, I mean, I did all the flags in Assassin's Creed. I mean, I use guides for all this stuff. I mean, I had the guidebook for GTA 4, and I found all the pigeons that way. I found some sort of a map on the internet for the flags in Assassin's Creed. So I basically had my laptop open while I was playing the original Assassin's Creed. The furnaces, I just sort of collected at random. I saw them and I grabbed them, but I wasn't going up way. I mean, there was tons of like the manuscript pieces. I mean, if you it opened up some sort of extra ending, I think it was, if you found the ones in like the nightmare difficulty. And I was like, well, I'm having trouble enough with it as it is. So I sort of left it. Mirror's Edge, I never played it, so it wasn't my sort of thing. I've got one more of these, and then we'll sort of wrap up the show with. What the hell is it? Where's it gone? Sorry. I wonder if it's that one. Here we go. This is from Games Radar. The top seven most shameful ways you've died in video game. In a video game. I haven't got this ages ago. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but this looks like fun. Mortal Mockers. One thing we make that makes video games so great is the fact that the death, a permanent end in the real world, is but a fleeting moment in a game. Because you're immortal in these virtual worlds, you're free to die and respawn however you choose. Are you a soldier seeking a glorious death? Pit yourself against an endless horde of enemies on the highest difficulty. I tried that actually with Assassin's Creed. There was a bit where basically I was running away from someone and it was literally non-stop soldiers. I tried that. It didn't really work. That's a lie. It did work. I got like through the first area and it was like, you know, get through to the second area, but I got bored and I'm like, bugger it, I'm just going to run away. But yeah, and then there's Assassin's Creed, you know, the new ones I'm talking about, you had to get on, when you're taking over the enemy ship, because there's like one of the higher ones, it's like, you know, kill 15 soldiers and then destroy these powder kegs or something. But me, it's like, I just took out all the people on the ship, which was quite funny, because once you've killed all the people on the enemy on the ship, it's like all your soldiers standing around looking puzzled because they have nothing to do, and then you just finish off the ship. But yeah, I'll go into this list, the ways we've died. I mean, you know. Okay. Seven. Leaping to your death in a first-person shooter. The object is to slay others, not yourself, but in the heat of a particularly impressive multi-kill, sometimes you just lose it. If it being your pride because you just sent your character sailing off a cliff or into the molten hot magma of a lava pit? Was it the sheer excitement that made you jump? Strafe shooting without watching where you were going? A desperate subconscious effort to escape the absurdity of war? Who knows? All you can say for certain is that your sharpshooting hot streak has come to a most inglorious end. What's number six? Number six. Being beaten by a button masher in a fighting game. I'm going to point my fingers at my sister at this. It's not like they're going to change it up. Spammers in fighting games have a very simple MO. Find one particular exploitive normal or special move, then repeat it with ad nauseum until they win. You could argue that projectile spamming or bread and butter combos are a quintessential part of any 2D fighter. And you'd be right, but there is a simple difference between continuous keeping your opponent locked down with a barrage of fireballs and chucking out plasma before they can know before they all know what to do. Yeah, I mean, I can agree with this. I mean, playing Mortal Kombat back in the day with my sister, just keep doing the fucking leg sweep. She was a pain in the ass to play games with. Number five, tripping over environmental hazards in a hack and slash game. When you're playing a game like Diablo or Torchlight, you're in pursuit of a simple two-step feedback loop. Step one, click enemies. Step two, get loot. Elements like skill trees and companions and lore are simple icing on the cake. You're mainly interested in becoming the most efficient killing machine possible, because when the monster death toll rises, your profit stats grow up. Stat bonuses go up. What you're not so concerned with, however, are things in your environment that aren't gold-laden chests or slobbering fiends. Things like spike traps, poisonous gas clouds, exploding barrels, and electrifying grates. But when your precious character dies pillar of flame, you've finally understood the timeless adage, don't stand in the fire. We shudder to think of how many mythical champions lost their lives because They were staggering back and forth over death traps in a manner akin to Sideshow Bob. But yeah, I think I can say with this one, because I don't really know what they're on about with this one, to be honest. But I mean, I can say it with, what the hell is the game called? Streets of Rage. There was, I think it was Streets of Rage 1, when you were at the construction zone area, when, and basically you're all over this sort of construction site, you're on like a building, and, yeah, a building in construction. There's bits where there's parts of the floor missing, and I accidentally sort of walked on it by accident, and you know, that sort of happens. Number four, being slain by a brain dead jungle creep in a MOBA. MOBAs are intense, fun, and addicting because they pit players against player. Unlike a bot, there's no telling what your opponent is capable of. Their next move might be just what you're expecting, or complete opposite. But the creeps that populate the lanes are far more knowable. Following a programmed set of rules and never straying from those directives, the neutral creeps that populate the jungle are even more docile, refusing to leave their designated area and totally ignoring your hero until you attack. You think that would be make dying to jungle creeps virtually impossible. I have no idea what the hell they're talking about, because I've never played a MOBA. I barely even know what it means. Number three. Mistakenly assuming you were supposed to lose in an RPG. I think I know where this is going. Concern it, the fight is... that's what that word is. There's no way the designers intended for you to beat the boss, because no matter what you try, your opponent's health bar simply refuses to drop. So to move things along, you'll just lay down your arms and let the enemy wail on you. Now let's see where the story takes us next. Oh, and you're just lying dead on the ground because this is game over screen. RPGs have a tendency to put a player in an honourable situation for the sake of tension. But like your mother said, you should never assume. Otherwise, you just might doom your own party members to a pointless death when the fight was about to turn in your favour. That happened to me several times in RPGs. And I think about, you know, go back to Final Fantasy XI, hearing stories about some of the harder bosses that take, you know, whole troops of people to fight, and, you know, their health would still not go down. Refusing to accept a defeat when an encounter was designed to be impossible, short of exploiting a bug or diving to the game's code and hacking your way to victory. Nothing you can do to accomplish a sufficient undertaking. All right, number two is getting boxed in by a tower rush in an RTS. Scouting is such a huge part of strategy games for a reason. When you know what's coming, you can prepare. But why bother? This is Bronze League, and you've already got enough to worry about managing your build order, upping your APM without sending sending a lone worker on a reconnaissance mission all over the map. Your opponent is probably thinking the exact same thing, opting to focus on a game basic opening and worry about army composition later. But as you move to expand your base, a horrifying realization sets in, and despair overwhelms your entire being. You've just been tower rushed, cornered by attack capable structures being used as encroaching offense instead of home turf defense. Much like a medieval siege tower, you can try to assemble an army or repair your buildings all you want. It's as futile as a rat trying to escape an exitless maze. As the claustrophobia starts to strangle your resolve, your hands waver over the surrender button. It hits you, all this could have been prevented if only you checked to see what was happening to feet from your main base. I mean, you know, I can sort of agree with this, not from playing multiplayer stuff, but I mean, I did this in Call of Duty, Command and Conquer back in the day. You know, I'd take over a couple of the enemy bases, you know, take over their construction, get access to their weapons, and just basically build as much as I possibly could, store it at my base, and then basically just one big rush to take over the enemy. It's really, really fun. Number one, dying to the first enemy of a platformer. It's quite fun. They've got a picture of the Super Mario here. There are so many ways that can happen. You forgot to which button was jump. You were running too fast. You hit a block and bounced right into the harm's way. You tried to jump over on their head, but mistimed it. Your reaction speed sucks, but no matter how much you slice it, nothing can be more embarrassing than running headfirst into the very first baddie of a 2D side-scroller. This was the easiest possible test that could be thrown your way, and you failed hard. Yeah, I could agree with that. There's so many times I've died in a platformer from that sort of thing. No idea what Matty's trying to get in the chat room. But yeah, I say this pretty much ends the show for this evening and for this week. But, you know, as it's Tuesday, you know, you've got no alcohol by volume tonight because Kevin's sick. I think he's finally been hit by the AIDS virus. But there will be an Unsigned Hype and a Dutch and Royce late this afternoon. So this evening. So listen to them. And, you know, as I said, you know, since the beginning of the show, there's only a few more shows left until I take a break for a few months to work on my projects. But, you know, as usual, email us, antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. Join the Facebook groups, facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/antisocialgameradio. And also follow us on Twitter @MLRGamerRadio. I say, I've been Ashley, and I'm out of here. See you all next week.
Actually brought anything to the table?
Oh my god, what a bag of burden that British piece of shit was. Holy shit.
A woman can pilot.
From everyone here at BBC Radio 4, this is Alice Arnold, hoping that you sleep well and wishing you a very good night. Good night.
The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking north at Sierra, south at Sierra, south or southwest, or northwest, or northeast or east. Occasional rain, wintry showers, occasional rain or showers, occasional rain, moderate or poor, becoming moderate or good.